You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. A little later on in the show, Frank and Jules will be here to reflect on France's victory over Sweden. But there's only one place, isn't there, to start today, and that is in Seville, which saw Spain thrash Germany by 6-0. Stevie Nicol, Craig Burley and Jürgen Klinsmann joining us. Jürgen, it seems we start with a German on the panel. How do you react to that?
Well, it's definitely a very, very tough one to swallow. I mean, 6-0 is unacceptable. It's just not good. And obviously, you know, I can only imagine what the media will look like tomorrow in Germany. But getting 6 goals against one of the biggest rivals, kind of in world football, is a very tough pill to swallow. I mean, and they could have even scored more. Spain, yeah. You know, that's the crazy part of all things. You know, so it's obviously it's very, very, very disappointing for Germany. It's a big day for Spain. You know, they can celebrate. They won the group now. Germany only needed a point. They needed only a tie to win that group. But it is obviously it's a big disappointment, and there will be a very, very hectic couple of days coming up in Germany.
We'll talk about Spain, obviously, because to their credit, they were there and they got the goals. But Germany, really, you feel, is the big storyline, Craig. How could they be that bad?
It's hard to put your finger on, because people will talk about, well, 3 or 4 missing players that might have played, but then so did Spain. You know, experienced midfield for Germany that never really got close to the Spanish midfield. Philip Max at left back, I think it was his second or his third cap, but his possession in the first half was horrendous. And Spain just clipped balls over the top of him all the time. You know, when you're an elite country that's expecting to be winning and challenging every major championship, when you get beat 3 or 4-0, that's a bad day at the office, a real bad day. When you get beat 6-0, and as Jürgen said, it could have been, you know, it could have been double figures, let's be honest about it, that's an embarrassment. And the way that Spain just were able, as the game went on, just to play through the middle of the park and the middle of the back four was quite incredible. I mean, I've never seen an international team with so many supposed experienced players so disheveled. I mean, it was quite incredible. And it was like taking candy off a kid for Spain in the end. That's how bad it was.
And there never seemed to be any sort of response from anyone in a German shirt, Stephen.
No, not at all. I mean, there's two parts of this team that were horrendous, and I think the obvious one you would say would be the back line, which I'll get to, but in the middle of the park, they got completely outnumbered. And nobody did anything about that. And, you know, as experienced as Gundogan and Toni Kroos are, I think you've got to put some blame on them for not reacting and bringing other people back in. But I think you also have to look at Jogi Löw, because he didn't do anything either. And he actually didn't do anything at half-time to make the middle of the park solid, at the very least, to stop them getting at that back line. And I'm watching this game and I'm thinking, who do you blame for this shambles of a defence? Can you really just easily turn round and blame Jogi Löw? Because the choices he has are horrendous. Sulla, clearly not fit, who I don't rate anyway. You're bringing on Tah, clearly not fit. You know, you've been playing Rudiger, who's not getting a game at Chelsea. You're playing Koch, who at Leeds, his defence has let in more than 2 goals a game in 8 Premier League games. So, you know, where does the blame lie? Defensively, at least, does Jürgen just not have any choices, or is he just making bad choices?
Now, the thing is, Stevie, that you've kind of opened the door, Stevie, because let's not forget, March 2019, Jurgen Klopp made the decision to say, right, that's it, we're moving on. Jerome Boateng, Mats Hummels, thank you very much for your time in the national side, but we feel we need to turn the page and we need to move on. So as much as he didn't have many choices at the back going into today's game, a lot of that was done by him. It was his choice.
Yeah, and it was a choice that was made based on what happened on the internal side of the team, and nobody from the outside can really evaluate that. Nobody can say why this decision was made besides Joachim Löw and his coaching staff. So then, you know, it started a period of experimenting, you know, in the new back lines, new center backs. You know, Jonathan Tah came in, Rüdiger was on site, but nobody really could step it up in that time frame now, since the other players left the team. And the biggest question mark certainly is still is about leadership. Who is the real leader of that team? You know, obviously Manuel Neuer is a very quiet, very strong personality and still outstanding goalkeeper. And I said, you know, he still saved the result a little bit today with a couple of amazing saves. But nobody on the field besides Manuel Neuer as a goalkeeper stepped it up in the last 2 years, you know. And this is really sad to see. You know, it lacks a leader. It lacks a personality that, you know, after the second or the third goal, it sends out some signals, you know, does something, I don't know, does a foul interrupts the game, gets in the face of the Spanish players, you know, and that raises the big question about Thomas Müller. Because Thomas Müller is a type of a leader. So he's the leader of the pack at Bayern Munich still, because he keeps those young players in line. You know, the Leroy Sané, the Serge Gnabry, they all follow Thomas Müller on the field. And that's why Bayern Munich is unbeaten, I don't know for how long now, in the Champions League. So this is a big, big problem right now for the German side, just about 6-7 months out before the Euros then start. So it will be a hurricane tomorrow in Germany in the media world. Obviously, a lot of people will question Jogi Löw, but a lot of people also will question the chemistry of this team. You know, what about certain players? You know, that, as Stevie mentioned, you know, in the middle of the park, you know, Toni Kroos plays Real Madrid and he's such an outstanding player, but he was unexisting today. So was the same with Gündogan, who plays for Man City. Big clubs, you know, they have enough personality to take things in their own hands, you know, and guide a team especially when things go wrong. So this is a very, very dramatic situation for Germany, and there will be a lot to be discussed the next couple of days, weeks, months for Germany.
Craig, we were surprised, weren't they, when they got knocked out in the group stages of the World Cup 2 years ago. We thought, well, that's it, you know, Jogi Löw is going to walk, that'd be the end of his tenure. Obviously, he stayed. You feel now, surely, he's used up his last life.
Well, he's going to go to the Euros with... I would imagine. I mean,
really? I mean, even after that, you kind of feel you've got some months now to work if it's a new coach coming in?
Well, it's going to be a big dust storm in Germany, as Jürgen said, but I don't think they'll cut him just yet. I mean, there'll be a lot of calls for him to be cut from his job, but, you know, he just signed that contract before the last championship, and that's why they decided just to keep going and bring in some fresh faces. The irony is that the three players that he basically retired, and Boateng, Müller and Hummels, were at the time not playing particularly well, and they've actually had a resurgence in their careers. You know, Dortmund have had a steadfast start to the season defensively. Boateng's been playing better for Bayern. And since Hansi Flick came in, Müller's been back to his old best. So I didn't like the way they went about it. I mean, if he went down to those players and said, listen, I'm making some changes, there's a transition within this team to younger players, but I would really like to keep you involved, but I can't guarantee you're going to play, but if I need you, will you help me out? I think that's a better policy than going to them and saying, you're out. Mm. Right, don't need you anymore, you're out. Now, if it's the latter way that he did it, if he has to go back to those players... If it was me, I'd say, get lost. Because he really threw them under the bus. And so it depends what his management was. And Oliver Bierhoff, when they spoke to these players in terms of letting them know that they weren't going to be needed for the national team. But quite clearly, they have some problems going into this tournament. Big, big problems. But it's ironic that the three players that he basically retired have all been playing particularly well of late.
Jürgen, from your understanding, if he went back and said to these players, I made a mistake, or would you like back in, would they be willing to return to international football with him still in charge?
Oh, I definitely think they would be willing. I mean, who's not willing to play for his own country? You know, I mean, and also we don't really know how they left it, you know, how Yogi left it with those three players privately. So they had these discussions privately. So the media doesn't really know how the situation is right now. I think if Yogi decides to give them a call or meet them for a coffee, I see there are no problem at all. But I see a problem right now, just from the outside looking in and obviously watching a game like this today, is the chemistry of the group, is the chemistry, you know, as we said, you can lose a game and you can maybe lose 2 or 3 nil, but you cannot lose 6-0 because you never accepted the one-on-one challenges, you never accepted the battles, you know, at set pieces. The way they got conceded 2 goals there on set pieces is unacceptable. So there are other problems than just, you know, if you should call back these three players or not. I mean, having a Thomas Müller, obviously, in the shape he is right now, or since a year, he's playing unbelievable well for Bayern Munich and won the Champions League and did all these things. There's nothing wrong with him, you know, coming back. But I think it's an overall question is, you know, what's going on in on the inside of this team, because they were not helping each other, they were not backing up each other, no matter who is playing. So they made it far too easy for Spain, and so there are so many issues right now laying on the table that there's a lot of work for them to do over the next couple of months.
Jürgen, how do you fix that chemistry, though? Because that doesn't seem something necessarily easy to come in and sort out. It's the only way of doing that with a new coach.
No, I don't see... There's no need for a new coach, because then you panic completely, and then what message should you send out there? Then you need to establish a new hierarchy within the team within a half a year, you know, which will be very, very difficult. I don't see a reason to now to panic and look for a new coach. I think, you know, there are a lot of issues to be addressed. So you got to go. You got to obviously, you know, fly around the places and meet the players individually or in small groups, you know, have a lot of communication now with your leaders within that group, whoever they are. I mean, only Yogi Löw knows, you know, who's the number one guy in the team, 2, 3, 4, 5. And as Stevie knows, the hierarchy of a team is very, very important. You know, everybody needs to be on the same page there. And so this needs to be redefined. It needs to be discussed among the everyone involved there in that environment. But it's a lot of work, and obviously, you know, there's not much time left. You know, in 6-7 months, you know, we enter the Euros, and they need to perform as a team, and that's what they didn't do today.
Dan, in some sense, the German Federation would have egg in their face if they were to make that decision now, because there was a big call for him to go after the debacle at the World Cup, but they stuck with him. And so they're going to have to stick with him through this European Championship, which is going to be his last dance anyway. I mean, let's be frank about it. Unless they win the damn thing, which they're not going to do. So in some sense, that's another reason why they won't pull the trigger, because every man and his dog will come out and say, well, we told you to do this, you know, 2.5 years ago or whatever it was, and you didn't do it. So they're not going to make any decisions, I wouldn't imagine, until after the championships next year.
Just to bring it up, because I want to, England beat Germany 5-1 back in 2001, Stevie. Germany then made it to the World Cup final in 2002. Can you see the same sort of reaction from this result as we're talking about trying to fix that chemistry within the group? Do you think Jürgen Löw, do you think he's got the quality of players to do that ahead of the summer?
No, I don't think so. Listen, that result you're talking about 100% came out of the blue. You know, we've been talking about Germany over the last 12 months at least, about how defensively bad they are, how they can't keep a lead, totally un-German-like. And it, there seems no end to it. So, listen, the Federation have to ask one question to themselves. Is this a one-off, or is this a result that has been building up? Because every time Germany have been stepping on the field recently, the back line hasn't been working, the middle of the park's been average, and they've gotten away with it because they've got some talent up front. If they decide that this is just going to continue, then they have to make a quick decision. I understand what Jürgen's saying about, you know, with only, what, 6 months to go, it's hard to build your hierarchy and build something. But if it's going the wrong way, in 6 months, it's going to be even further away. So if they think that Jürgen's not getting a tune out of the team, then they're going to have to make some tough decisions.
And of course, going into this game, as Jürgen reminded us, Germany just needed a draw to top the group, given how poor Spain have been in some of these Nations League matches. They were exceptional today, Craig. In particular, Ferran Torres looked like a world beater.
Well, the young man's made a big move to Man City, and he's played a couple of different positions, including striker, in recent weeks because of the absence of Jesus and Aguero. So he's getting some great experience playing with some top talent at City and the Etihad. But, you know, his finish was just so calm and composed, the first one, which he just volleyed into the side netting of the goal. It was a super finish, but he's a classy young player. He's got a little bit of everything. Clearly, he's got goals in him. He's got pace. He's got clever movement. But the Spanish, the whole thing was driven by the midfield of Rodri and Koke. And actually, I thought it was a bonus for them when Canales of Betis went off. And the lad from Napoli, whose name escapes me, came on, the left-footed lad. Because he's got great balance and poise. And I just thought that Spanish midfield were excellent. The Germans couldn't get close to them. And of course, as well, Alvaro Morata, who's had a difficult time in the last couple of moves he's made, is starting to look more like the Morata we knew from 4 or 5 years ago when he was leading the line for Juventus in the Champions League final in Berlin. So all the little pieces for Spain came together in this game.
How impressed were you with Spain today, Jürgen?
No, very, very impressed. I mean, they set a very high tempo from the beginning on. Germany never could get close to them in midfield, or they never could establish a high pressing, but they usually do. And the way they created their chances was wonderful to watch. I mean, it was outstanding, but obviously also based on a very poor German performance. But you got to give them all the credit. You got to give them a huge compliment and the way they played, and they deserved those six goals as well.
That's it, isn't it? I suppose that's the point, Stevie, is how excited should we get about Spain's performance today, given how bad Germany were?
Listen, at the end of the day, you can only perform if you're lit. And they absolutely performed big time. Want a poor performance amongst the team. Olmo, that's probably the best game I've ever seen him play. Morata looked like a proper centre-forward. And Torres probably could have had 5 or 6 goals. But you have to hold back a little and suggest that, one, they were playing against a German defence that was, well, to call it a defence is actually the wrong word. And they've only scored 3 goals in the last 5 games. So I think we need to hold fire. Yes, they were fantastic on the day. Yes, they created and scored some nice goals. But the truth is, consistently, they don't create and score as many goals as they did today.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. A lot more from Stevie and Craig available on our YouTube channel. Click on Extra Time, the boys there answering some of your questions.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
Meanwhile, France finished top of the group after a 4-2 victory against Sweden. Frank and Jules are here then to talk about the French. Frank, would I be wrong to say there's a big argument to say Olivier Giroud was man of the match today?
He was, because he scored 2 goals, yeah, he can be man of the match. But I love the investment that he put into the game, even trying to defend. But we can add Griezmann also, who had a good game. Paul Pogba had a very good game as well. And in fact, all the French team had a good game. And like the game against Portugal, I think all the other teams have to be happy that the European Championship is not tomorrow, because I think France will be the winner. They're absolutely fantastic. It changed dramatically from a week ago, but it's, they sent a message. Okay, we don't care about friendly games. We lost against Finland, but when there is a competition, we are there. They've been absolutely tremendous again today with the maturity, everything, the ability of changing the game, the pace of the game. Nothing much to say, you know. Allez la France.
And we know what it's like because Frank is obviously part of that generation that won the World Cup bitter when any other French side does well. So to get that sort of compliment, Jules, is quite something.
It's quite something, you're right. I mean, he was clearly biting his tongue to praise this this current national team. No, I mean, more seriously, this was two very good games, especially the one against Portugal, of course, that we mentioned a lot. We talked a lot about it on the show. But Deschamps tonight, after the game, reminded everyone, like he always loves doing, and it's not just to give a lot of credit to himself, but also to his team. He said, hey, don't forget, we took 16 out of 18 points in our group. And in our group, we had the European champions in Portugal and the World Cup finalists in Croatia. And no one can do better than 16 points in the National League group stage. And he's right. It was not always perfect, but certainly when it mattered, they were good. And as we said on Saturday night, when it mattered as well, the senior players, like we saw again tonight, responded well and carried the team.
Jules, I mentioned Giroud. I just find it fascinating. We hear again Deschamps saying, look, he may have to leave in January. Yeah, it doesn't matter if he doesn't leave in January. Giroud is Deschamps' number one man, isn't he, Jules?
He is certainly, for games like the ones today, as we explained again on Saturday, I think there will be different opposition where maybe Deschamps will feel, you know what, I need Martial as my number nine, or I need Mbappe more central instead of Giroud because there'll be more movement, there'll be more spaces, more movement, all of that. But in certain games, Giroud will be his number one. I think the important thing on Deschamps saying he has to play more is because if he doesn't play enough at club level, it will take him far longer to get fully fit, to match fitness before Euros, for example. And I don't think Deschamps wants that. I don't think Deschamps wants Giroud to work 2 weeks every day to be fully fit and match fit. Whereas if he plays regularly with his club, he will arrive for the Euros and be ready there and can go straight in. There will be no time for him to have to work on his fitness. And I think that's the key, really. And as Deschamps said tonight again, Deschamps said Giroud was bad against Finland a week ago like the rest of the team, but that game was very useful to build up a bit his match fitness, and then we saw he came on well against Portugal and he was very good tonight, because that first game against Finland was really needed for him to build up that match fitness they didn't have because he never plays with Chelsea.
Let's take a look at my France checklist. We haven't spoken enough about Griezmann or Pogba, Frank.
Yeah, I mentioned them a little bit because that's the ability of Deschamps, you know, being able to bring the best from players who are in difficulties with their club. And we've been very hard and maybe harsh on Pogba against Finland, like we've been with all the rest of the team. And we never thought that Pogba would start against Portugal, and he did, and had an absolutely fantastic game. Again today, I thought he would rest a little bit, but he put him again. Kante was suspended. And alongside Rabiot, who has been absolutely fantastic, maybe the best player of the whole team, he was there. Pogba did the game. And that's going to be interesting when he goes back to Manchester to see how Solskjaer was going to behave with him. Will he be on the bench? When I see the power and what Pogba can bring tonight and against Portugal, no way that he can be on the bench, even for Manchester United. And the same for Griezmann. Griezmann today was the master of orchestra of the game. You know, it was very good. He went to defend, even gave a ball back with his head to Lloris, you know, at the 85th minute. Fully fit, you know. And those two players, we talked about the comment that Pogba did about saying that coming to the national team is a big breath. He shouldn't have said that. Of course he shouldn't. But that's the reality. When I see those two players, when they play for France, they're different.
But it doesn't help your cause if you're under the microscope, Jules, from Manchester United fans questioning, well, where is this Paul Pogba when he is given the chance by Solskjaer?
Yes, and I think there's different reasons. You can blame Paul, of course, and I think he knows that he should do better. And again, I've said it many times on the show, I think he knows that. But there's also everything around him that maybe has to be different a bit or has to change, or maybe the environment is not as good as the one with the national team. And again, I go back to what Deschamps said tonight after the game. We asked him the question about Pogba and those three games he played. And he said, I don't want to criticize anyone, never mentioned Solskjaer's name, but he said, I know Paul, he's a world-class player. When he has to defend, he defends. When he has to go forward, he goes forward. When there's an assist to give, he gives the assist. Basically saying, like, you know, this is the real Paul Pogba. I don't know what's happening when he plays with his club, but this is not the real Paul Pogba that you see at United. The real one is the one that we saw in the last 4 days, for example. And I think, of course, he has a point. I think Solskjaer has a point as well if he's not happy with Pogba's performances with United. I just think it's not possible that a player is that good with his national team and that average with his club level. There's surely something to be done there for him to have that consistency, both at club level and international level.
I don't mean this to turn into a Pogba discussion, but we've kind of gone down this road. And just the point that I would make, Jules, is that you're saying, well, Deschamps has come out and said, look, he's always happy here. I don't know what's going on there. But it isn't the only coach at Manchester United who struggled to get the best out of Paul Pogba. Jose Mourinho, of course, famously said after he won the World Cup, he wanted to see that sort of performance as well. So it's not an anomaly that Pogba's not playing well under Solskjaer. It seems more the case he cares more for France.
Maybe, although I think he loves Manchester United. He's happy at that club. He loves the fans. This is a club, obviously, very important in his life because he arrived there when he was so young, left and came back a few years later. So this is, I think that the club in itself and the people around that club, there's no problem there at all. I just think that he needs to find a way of expressing himself in the same way that he does with the national team. Whether he plays in the same position, obviously, as we said as well many times, the players around him at United are not the same as in the national team. We could always debate on which ones is better or which formation is better. But I think that Paul, with the talent that is his talent, should be very good anywhere, pretty much, on the pitch. So there's something maybe that has to click for him at United, that click again, because he's had some good games in the past. And I say that again every time, and it's not always true, but I'm really hoping that he can carry the form that he's showed in the last two games with United, starting at this weekend in the Premier League, for example, and then that he can, again, find that consistency, because there's no reason why he can't just take that form with France, have that momentum, how dynamic he was again tonight, and do the same with his club.
People shout at me, Frank, and I get it,
because we
talk about it a lot, but this juxtaposition of Pogba in a France shirt is very different to Pogba in a Manchester United shirt.
It's different. I don't want to defend too much Pogba. The thing is, when you realize what he's capable of not doing with Manchester United and what he's capable of doing with France, you have to consider the fact that maybe he's around players who suits better to his football. And you can say that because you see from other players like Griezmann, who's having the same kind of problem, you know, with Barcelona, being average with the club, being fantastic with the national team. And you can add so many other players, you know. So maybe you have to consider that the level of the national team is better than the level of some clubs where the players play. And that's quite normal because you have normally the creme of la creme. But the thing is, Pogba is responsible for also what he does with Manchester United. And he has to make sure that he works properly with the club because that's the club who pays him every week. And he has to do better, that's for sure.
Meanwhile, just a word on Sweden, Jules. Miserable Nations League campaign, just the one victory. Meanwhile, their greatest ever player is tearing up in Serie A. Is there an argument to say that maybe they should get him back?
100%. I think if Marcus Berg, who's 34 years of age, so only, 5 years younger than Zlatan, and he was an average player now, to be fair. Okay, he still plays in the Champions League with Krasnodar, but he's way past his best. If he can still be the captain of this team starting for Sweden, Ibra could walk in this team easily. The problem, as we know, is that he doesn't get on at all with Jan Andersson, the Swedish head coach, national team manager. Many times he's had very strong words against him, on him, even calling him an idiot a couple of times before. So I don't think there's any way back for Zlatan, simply because Jan Andersson would lose faith completely, you know, if he was calling back someone who's, in a way, treated him so badly. But it's a real shame because I still think that Ibra could help this team. He could help someone like Alexander Isak to develop all the young players, Kulusevski, for example, as well. He would be such a good role model for them. Unfortunately, I just don't think he would have a return, at least not under this head coach.
It is a shame, isn't it, Frank, overall, just from football's point of view?
Exactly. That's my concern. You know, I want to see Zlatan. You know, I barely follow the Calcio, and I don't see him every time. And I want to see him in an international level. And I'm sure he can serve Sweden very well, according to what we saw today. We have the kind of problem, you know, with and there is always a debate for different reasons, but we always a debate with Benzema. Should he be back with the national team of France? But we have fantastic other players to make sure that Deschamps have maybe the right of not putting Benzema back. But I don't see the same for Sweden. I mean, as Jules just said, you know, if Berg can play for the national team, there is no reason why Zlatan couldn't be in that team, because he can serve his country very well. He's going to be a perfect image for the new players, the young players. And I would have loved to see him playing against Kimpembe and the Varane tonight. You know, it would have been very interesting. I didn't see that competition, and I missed that.
Brilliant stuff, guys. Thank you very much. Just a reminder, more from Jules available on the Gab and Jules podcast. The new one drops on Thursday.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The Premier League returns this weekend. I tell you what, there's some big matches, including Tottenham against Manchester City on Saturday. Craig, Stevie and Jürgen with me. Jürgen, let's talk about your former side. Spurs fans are starting to get a little excited, and there's even talk of a title.
Yeah, and I think rightfully so. Rightfully so. They're dreaming about finally maybe getting to that point, winning this amazing trophy, but I think it's a logical path. I think, you know, over the last couple of weeks, months, you know, we see something is growing stronger and stronger. Obviously, Jose Mourinho has a strong hand in this whole development, and he's a competitor. You know, he will give everything he has to make that dream come true. So it's exciting time for Spurs fans. And I keep all my fingers crossed.
A reality check, I imagine, Mr. Burley will give us now and tell everyone to calm down.
More chance of Scotland winning the Euros.
Oh, hey, how long did it take us to the show to get you to mention that again?
Well, listen, I think if he gets them in the top four, he's done a really good job. The league's a little bit upside down at the moment. We've got Southampton in the top four. We've got Aston Villa up there, who were in the top two at one point. Who have improved, there's no doubt, their side, but they finished a point above the relegation last year. We had Palace up there for a little bit. We've got City down in mid-table. So things are going to all shake out a little bit. But look, he's brought a bit of solidity to them. They generally don't dominate games, but they've got a bit of pace on the counter-attack. They've got Gareth Bale on the side now. He has some options. Reguilón's been a good signing at left-back as well. It seems like a happy camp, which is good. And listen, they possibly could have a fight on for the top four once United get going. We'll see if Arsenal get going. We'll see what happens to Everton. So it's going to be a dogfight. But I expect City and Liverpool to ramp up, particularly after this international break. But if you're a Spurs fan, why not enjoy it? But I mean, I saw them against Brighton. I think it was two games ago. They got a bit of a going over at times for Brighton. Bale comes off the bench and scores the winner. So some of the games have been tight for them, but. Yeah, I think there'll be a few people who were doubting or you know, turning their nose up at the Mourinho appointment are probably sitting quite pleased at this moment in time.
Stevie?
Well, I can see after what's going on at Liverpool with no back line that clearly if that continues, they'll drop points. So I can see the optimism. I can understand it. But the truth is, they don't dominate teams. I don't remember them playing a game and dominating from start to finish. And as I said, all the teams that have won the Premier League recently, other than Leicester, that's been a huge part of why they've won it, because they've dominated a lot. And then when it's mattered most, they've come up with a goal whenever it was needed. So, yes, they're in the mix. If this crazy Premier League keeps producing what it has been, then there's every chance that Spurs could win it. But then, if this crazy Premier League keeps producing what it has been, anybody could win it, to be honest. So, yes, they could, but only because of the turmoil. Not because they will be so much better than anybody else.
What would be a successful season, finally, Jürgen, for Spurs?
Well, I think a successful season is always to get in the top four in the Premier League. Obviously, qualifying for the Champions League is now a must for Spurs. It's a must for the big teams there. But when you have a season starting like this, it's a little bit, as Stevie said, rightfully, you know, every team is a bit all over the place, you know, so there's nobody running away right now. And that's an opportunity. And at the end of the day, if you kind of take advantage of that opportunity because the other ones are not picking up a rhythm, they're not winning whatever 8 or 10 games in a row and not kind of running away from you with 6 or 10 points, then throw yourself in there and build that belief and build that culture of winning. And what Jose Mourinho definitely does really well over the stretch of his entire career is he has this piece of nastiness in him. He transfers that type of nastiness, that type of aggression to his players. You know, he's always saying that you're not winning a championship with good guys. You know, you got to be determined. You got to be tough. You got to be, you got to be able to sacrifice certain elements over the stretch of an entire season. It's a marathon. And as long as nobody runs away in that marathon, which it looks like this season, then there's a chance for Spurs. So you got to believe in it.
Boys, thank you very much. We'll be looking ahead to this game, of course, in more detail over the upcoming days. Be sure to join us here on FC.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Belgium have the chance to qualify for the finals of the Nations League. That's if they avoid defeat against Denmark on Wednesday. Tom Hamilton caught up with Romelu Lukaku ahead of this game, started off by talking about their mindset going into the 2018 World Cup.
When we were on the plane to go into the World Cup, I mean, the whole preparation was really going there with the mindset of we can win this thing. That was really the mindset of the team, basically. And you know, the way how we were playing the whole tournament, we really played really, really good. Like, you know, if we could play every type of football, you know, if you want us to play offensive and create chances, we can do it. If you want us to score on a break, we can do it. If you want us to defend and play on the counter the whole game, I mean, we did it against Brazil. So, you know, we could play different types of football, but, you know, we had that one game against France where, you know, France was outplayed us, but like, they were a bit smarter than us, and you know, they won the game, and credits to them because they also played a good tournament with the team that they had.
We talk about the golden generation. Mm-hmm. This group of players you're with at the moment is truly remarkable. Mm-hmm. Is this something which you guys realize yourselves?
I mean, we know that we are a talented team, but we don't really call ourselves the golden generation like that. No, no, not, we are not. We're not like the, we don't give ourselves a name. We just know that we are a bunch of players that, you know, we are talented, and we know that there are a lot of players in this team that, you know, sometimes might not play, but they can walk in every other team. And yeah, it's nice to be in that environment because, you know, it gets really competitive and you really are going at each other in training, and then in the game you reach a very high level, and you know, you have to maintain that high level on the individual side if you want to keep playing, but also in training it makes you better. So it's a great environment to be in.
Is that something which Roberto Martinez has kind of taken on now as well, since he's been part of the setup?
I think when he came in, the thing he did, he basically changed the system from playing with a back four to a back three, and making sure that, you know, he could put as much offensive players as possible. So he changed the system, but then outside the pitch, he really didn't change too much. But he gave us more responsibility and more freedom. In a sense that, you know, we could spend time with the families and stuff like that, because a lot of the players don't see their families when they come to Belgium, you know. So he gave us a little bit more freedom, and he changed the system into a back three and into a 3-4-3, and you know, yeah, that's really you know, and he showed us where we could improve a little bit to make sure that, you know, everybody could fulfill their potential into the team.
Well, it wasn't only Romelu Lukaku that Tom Hamilton spoke to. He also chatted to Kevin De Bruyne and Roberto Martinez about the rise for Belgium up to number one in the world. Well, as I mentioned before, Belgium in action on ESPN Plus on Wednesday, as well as England against Iceland. Also, you've got that big game between Bosnia-Herzegovina and Italy. A victory for Italy would see them win their Nations League group. Once all these internationals are out of the way, it's all about the playoffs in MLS. Nashville taking on Inter Miami, our feature game on Friday night on ESPN2 at 9 p.m. Eastern. And then on Sunday, it's a doubleheader for you on ESPN. It kicks off with Minnesota United taking on Colorado Rapids, followed by the Portland Timbers against FC Dallas. Remember, those matches are one-offs. You lose, you go home. Well, that brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to everyone who has been on. Stay tuned, though. Craig and Stevie answering your tweets on Extra Time. Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined by Craig Burley. And Stevie's having horrible internet issues, so he's on a 2-second delay today, so this could be fun. Craig,
well, it looks like he's on a permanent delay to me because my screen's froze. So are we still on here? Yeah.
We're still going. Yeah, just about.
My screen's not still going.
Oh, Craig, with Scotland getting through to the Euros, you're going to be hearing a lot of this, aren't you? Craig, do you have any prediction on who would be the first player to score for Scotland in a major tournament since you? Do you see anyone getting a red card?
There's every chance the first player to score for Scotland will not be Scottish. He's probably going to be from the opposing team.
You're going on goal?
Yeah, I'm going on goal.
I heard Donaldson's commentary was like, Craig Burley, take that.
It's like, I don't know. Somebody wants to score and get sent off, then my run's over. If they don't, it continues on. I don't know. Listen, they could easily go there and not score because, Stevie Clark's done great, but he's done it just by, he knows what he's got, put it that way. He knows what he's got, and they can't be expansive. So they play a defensive game. And you even look at Andy Robertson. Andy Robertson hardly crossed the halfway line in some of these games for Scotland. But for Liverpool, he's playing like a left winger. So it's just the way Scotland play. Anything can happen.
Did you get into it, Craig? I wasn't with you with the penalty shootout. Did you? Were you involved? Like, were you emotionally involved?
What
in
a
it?
Daft question.
No, I know because it's Craig, but I'm just wondering. Maybe yeah, this right. would be the breaking point.
No. And I was in the studio, as you know, and covered it. And I don't get emotional with stuff like this. Why? I'm not a supporter. But actually, the next morning when I woke up, and I did think to myself, do you know what? What a great achievement from the coaching staff. Because in all fairness, there's been a lot of pretty good managers. I've had to dig themselves a grave after taking this job. You know, Gordon Strachan, you know, Craig Levein, Alec McLeish, Walter Smith, Josh Burley, the list
yeah.
goes on.
Yeah, we talked about Scotland a lot. That's enough now. Right, what was your go-to meal as soon as the season ends?
Same as when it was on.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Stevie did. No, but Craig, you were a little more careful, weren't you?
Yeah, just more of the same.
No.
No, it was just be the same no. during and after and whatever.
We didn't have... Yeah, we just... Yeah, no.
Stevie.
Listen.
More of the same.
Go on.
Listen, when you're an apprentice at Chelsea and after every day's training and taking the kit back and washing it and all that, before you went and got the tube underground back to your digs, there was a kebab and hamburger shop next to Fulham Broadway Station, and we all had an allowance in there, right, every day to go in and have burgers, kebabs, fries, milkshakes, right? So you're asking me about diets.
Wow.
That's what we had, and that's what the club provided.
Stevie, who's going to win a title first? AC Milan or Manchester United?
I'm going to say Manchester United. Because I think Manchester United can still attract established players, whereas AC Milan are kind of, I think that, you know, with Ibrahimovic and players like that, they're either going old or young. Whereas Manchester United can still attract
Edison Cavani,
as I said, established players. Well, listen, Ed, you're trying to be clever again as usual, but Edson Cavani is a good option coming off the bench for any team. I would have had no problem if Liverpool had signed Edson Cavani coming off the bench, by the way, with 20 minutes to go. So, put that one in your pipe.
Well, Zlatan's top goal scorer in Italy at the moment.
So?
No, I'm just saying. Like, you're saying they just bring in old people.
So what?
Old, effective people
that
put them top of the table.
Ah, good, thanks. Thanks for the fact. By the way, I eat more shepherd's pie than you do.
Right.
That's about as much relevance as yours, by the way, to the conversation.
Would Stevie rather have corn in his shepherd's pie or Sergio Ramos at Liverpool in January?
Sergio Ramos. Easy. Another easy one.
If it was possible, how hard should they push, Stevie? Because obviously there's lots of talk about him moving on from Real Madrid.
I don't wish to make this sound bad, but it depends how desperate they are. Listen, if Virgil van Dijk has a setback and it's going to take even longer, if Joe Gomez is struggling, then, you know, you're kind of... Listen, you would rather go for somebody like Upamecano at 21, who you're going to have for a decade. It gets kind of a no-brainer. And if you can't get him, then you kind of start going down the list. And clearly, you want a younger player who's going to be there for some time. You really want to avoid stop gaps, unless you're in a real hole. So, listen, if they got Ramos, it would only be for a couple of seasons. I think he's on the wane a little. But it wouldn't be the worst signing ever. He would do a job.
Dan, I there's nothing
even
more
he's injured though
like.
Today. He did his hamstring.
Yeah, there's nothing more I'd like to see than Sergio Ramos coming to Liverpool, because we could potentially witness the greatest 360 degree turn ever. in the history of punditry.
Oh yeah, right, aye. Good luck with that.
Yeah, he'll be world class like that. Good luck with that. That'll be it.
As soon as he, Dan, he'll not even have had his press conference and he'll be world class.
Which big nation is most likely to flop in Euros, Craig? Most likely to make a shock exit in the group stage.
Who's that group of death? Who's in that hard group that Hungary have just qualified?
I can't remember. Is it Hungary, Portugal, Germany? I don't know, I feel like I'm just saying names.
Right. Is it Portugal, France. Germany and
France?
Yeah.
Is it Portugal,
yes,
Germany?
Yes, Portugal. France, Germany and Portugal.
Germany then.
And
Germany.
Hungary.
Stevie?
Oh, what? After the shellacking they got for Spain, absolutely Germany.
Craig, isn't it long overdue that Southampton get some praise? Second best team since June and yet only get talked about in relation to bigger sides dropping points. Bonus points if you don't mention the 9-0 or try to sell our players to Liverpool.
I don't understand the question in terms of in a general sense, we wouldn't really talk about Southampton on the show because they're not going to be around in a league or European fight at the end of the season. But whenever they get a result, whenever I see them play, Hasenhüttl's done a very good job. I mean, there's no doubt about it. But I don't know who's going to praise them. I mean, we don't get the rundown for the show every day, and it's let's talk about Southampton. So yeah, They've got some good results, but so have Aston Villa.
Craig, did you play with anyone that didn't need to train well but was always good when it came to matches?
Oh. Wow. Now, I know I did, but I can't remember.
I think... Mark Hughes before?
Yeah, well, no, Mark Hughes trained well. He just trained poorly.
Right.
I think the question means did you, was there anybody you played with, and Stevie probably knows better than me, that maybe played on a Saturday and maybe didn't see a training ground again till the next Friday, maybe didn't even see the training ground again. There have been players like that because of their knees and stuff. Stevie?
So there's a couple of players who arguably would be in any Liverpool side that was ever picked from the history of the team, would be Ian Rush and Alan Hansen. And Dan, it's not everybody, and this is where I have a problem with all these, you know, they have all these things on and it's all about how far you've run and all the rest of it. But Alan Hansen and Ian Rush didn't have to do an awful lot. Because they did enough to keep them ticking over so that on a Saturday they were ready to give everything. I mean, you watch Ian Rush on a Saturday and then you watch them in training during the week and you'd be like, hey, how is that possible? And Big Al was the same. Some would argue Big Al had a cigar out when he was playing on a Saturday, but Big Al just did enough to keep himself ticking over, and a lot of players are like that. You know, there's a lot of us are the opposite. Like I was a guy who every day I was giving it every single thing every day because I had to. I couldn't get away with just not doing stuff, and then particularly with my diet. Obviously, there's a good reason, but I was a guy like Steve McMahon, Ronnie Whelan. You know, you had a core of guys who every day were at it, who were ratting around, you know, trying to close people down. And then you had Hansons and Rushies who were just kind of on the periphery all the time. But when the whistle went on a Saturday and it mattered, they were just as fit and strong and quick as anybody else.
I'll give you another player, Dan, that I didn't play with. Stevie didn't play with him either, I don't think, but it was that era. Paul McGrath. Paul McGrath from Man United, Villa, Republic of Ireland was a magnificent centre-half. Paul McGrath's knees were buckled together. I would imagine Paul McGrath didn't even know where the training ground was at Aston Villa, right? Because he probably never went there. But he played almost every weekend, he was magnificent. But his knees were shot to pieces. And so, you know, I don't know if you could do that these days with the tempo of the game. I don't know whether that would work. But certainly that was quite the norm back in the 80s and 90s.
I'm not sure if I mentioned it, boys, but when I lived in Madrid... go on, Stevie. Interrupt my story.
No, there was two others. One more famous than the other. Ledley King was another one who did the same as Paul McGrath for different reasons, but Ledley King was the same. Never trained and just played. And then towards the end of his career, Norman Whiteside was the same because of his knees. Norman would never train, but I'll tell you what, on a Saturday, you didn't want anything to do with him.
Next question. My Twitterless roommate Aidan wants to know your thoughts on Scott McTominay.
Hold on. No.
I want your story.
I forgot my
Come
story.
Come on, give us your story so about Madrid.
Real Madrid.
You know, I used to live in Madrid, yes?
How much?
Yeah. I used to go to training every day, yeah. And it will not shock you to learn that Ronaldo didn't break out in a sweat at all. Not Portuguese Ronaldo, but Brazilian Ronaldo. He just looked like a punter who was training with real footballers, and then at the weekend, bang, and turn it on. That's my story.
That was Mark Hughes.
My Twitterless roommate Aidan wants to know your thoughts on Scott McTominay. Is he good enough for Manchester United?
I thought he played at Manchester United.
Good enough at the moment.
Yeah. Good enough for you. No, I mean, Steve's just chuckling to himself.
I think, you know, if they want to get back, you know, you ask yourself the question, if they were going head to head with Liverpool and City for a full season, would they need a better quality player than that? The answer is yes. The young man's done well. He's done well for the national team, gone back and playing centre back as well. So he's got a few strings to his bow. But when you look at the standard of the midfielder that they had, and the Keynes and the Carricks and the Scholes and the Giggs and all that, you know, I'm going across the whole midfield here, then they need a better calibre.
Final question, another Scottish question. Do you have any memories of playing at Hampden Park, Stevie, which will be hosting Scotland for two Euro games?
Are you kidding? My first cap was at Hampden Park. And as I've told you on previous occasions, for some reason they've changed the anthem to the Flower of Scotland. And it used to be the pipes and drummers. I mean, to stand in front of them, 10 yards in front of them, probably 100 of them, and listen to them playing the bagpipes and the drums was absolutely phenomenal. And it was Scotland the Brave, by the way. There was no words to it. It was just music, and I'll tell you, you could feel your heart pounding out your chest. It was absolutely fantastic.
Craig?
No, I'm the same. When you go out in the field for a warm-up, particularly in a big game, not a midweek friendly against Australia, and a wet night, it was another night I can remember, horrible. But when it was a big game like England, and the playoffs, or Greece, which was the last game of the qualification for the Euros in 96, so it was a must win. And you go out and you warm up and the pipes are all playing, they're marching up and down, and the stadium's pretty much full at that point. Then you just realise how big it is. But, you know, things have changed at the moment, obviously, with no fans. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. But they changed Hampden a lot. I mean, they changed the seating and the shape of it and stuff. So it has changed, and a lot of people don't think it's a great atmosphere now, but I always enjoyed playing there, particularly in front of all the bagpipes and stuff.
Good stuff, boys. Thank you very much. I think we should limit to one Scotland question a week now.
Month.
We'll be back tomorrow for more. Until then, goodbye.